Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Have you got a drink? I've got a Lucky Saint.
0%.
0%. Dry January, Matt. Dry January.
Here we go.
Here we go. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening, Mr. Joe.
Good evening, afternoon and morning, Mr. Matt. Welcome, dear listener. Welcome to episode 2 in season 4. And what a packed out episode we've got. There's so much stuff to talk about this week that I imagine we're not going to get through it all. So I'll try. We're going to try to do our best. Also, apologies to start with. I've got a touch of sinusitis, dear listener. So, like, breathing through my nose is a distant memory. So, apologies for me sounding a little bunged up. I think I had the start of it last week, and I think Bruce Bacon pointed it out on our Patreon. He messaged saying he could hear now. I do apologize.
He could hear you breathing.
I have been breathing through my mouth for a week, and it's tiring.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and these two people always podcast remotely. Apart from the last couple of weeks, they've been in the same country so they can podcast together. One of the guys was eating crisps, and at the other times, the guy was like, "Stop eating crisps." And it just made me think about the very first podcast where we would effectively go to the local shop. We would buy about £20 worth of snacks, and then we would eat those snacks as we were recording the podcast, which is like so terribly unprofessional.
The audio quality on those wasn't great.
Crisp laden. And there was no plugins to get rid of that either. So you were
stuck. Not back then. I think we were recording, we had some mics that Mark Packham had borrowed from Pro Audio, and we were running them straight into one of those, like a battery powered Zoom H6. Handy recorder.
Still a great handy recorder. I know a few people that still take those to shoots and stuff.
I mean, that was our recorder for a long time. You know, even when you moved to London and me, Mark, and Jay were recording at Jay's, we would be going all through the H6, and then we'd plumb a laptop with you on it into the H6 using that as our master. It was great. It was really good. In fact, last year, I realized I'm so out of practice with doing live podcasts because we've been doing them remote for so many years. So last year when we did the Bronkoff and me, JD and Naomi all got together at JD's to record the podcasts, I was like, it was on the day I was heading up to JD's and I was like, oh, wait, I don't have a thing that I can record it still with. I had to like call my drummer Crispy and I was like, no, I think you've got an H6. Have you? Can I come and borrow it? But, you should. Yeah.
Should invest in one of those. Should invest in some sort of portable device to be able to record a podcast if we ever... Well, I mean, there is no restrictions now, is there? You know, we can see each other face-to-face. We just choose the easier option, which is just do it remotely.
Yes, exactly. Although we can see each other's face because
we can see each other's face.
Yes.
And we went through that fabled period of live streaming every podcast as well as recording it.
It was really bad. I think we were live streaming with like Mark's old 2008 MacBook Pro. I mean, I've got like a 2019 MacBook Pro now and the camera on it's so bad that I spent like £150 on a on a webcam just so that you can see me in better detail, Matthew.
The only time actually that I've been super impressed was when Thorpey came on, and we did do a kind of similar to what we're doing now. Obviously, people listening to this can't see us either, or won't be able to see us at any point. But he was like, "Yeah, I've just using my like fancy DSLR camera." Mm. I'm like, just, you know, super high def. Yeah. For no reason. But it's always nice to see people in a nice resolution, should I say.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's enough of resolutions, Joe.
yes, indeed. Well, anyway, we need to start this podcast on a very sad note. Of course, dear listeners, we're all aware we lost Jeff Beck last week. Legendary guitarist, and you know, his contribution to music, to guitar playing, has been absolutely substantial. He'll be incredibly missed. There have been some wonderful tributes that I've been reading, and of course, dear listener, I imagine that for a lot of you that you've done the same. You've been listening back through some of your favorite Jeff Beck records, whether that's Yardbirds or, you know, his own stuff. But, you know, I was reading some lovely, like, quotes from other players. I think it was in an article on Premier Guitar, they were saying that they believed that he and Jimi Hendrix were the most inventive and original rock and roll guitarist that there ever was. You know, there have been some lovely things read out. And so it's some wonderful, like, I love this, some stories. I really enjoyed this one that I read in an article. I'll just quote it directly. "I saw Beck use the whammy bar alone to play a slow, lovely feedback melody through his array of amps, and then point the guitar's headstock straight down into the stage and push himself into the air by placing his hands on the rounded back end of the body. When he touched down, he tossed the guitar, still feeding back, into his arms, hit two notes that revealed where the tuning had drifted, and flawlessly adjusted and picked up the melody he'd been playing before the acrobatic stunt." It's pretty cool.
There's not many people that can do what he did. I would say, you know, for us during the 10 years we've been doing this, probably the guitarist we've talked about, of big guitar players, we've talked about the least. Mm. But actually, and you know, I'm not just saying this, but probably one of the guitarists I've listened to the most.
Right, really?
Wow. Yeah, I, you know, out of those classic guitarists.
Sure. Out of, you know, all of Jeff Beck's mates, out of Clapton and Page, you know, you listen to Beck the most. You reckon?
Yeah, I think we were talking just before we started, and actually the record that got me into Jeff Beck was actually the album Jeff from 2003, which was his bizarre electronica record that is him playing guitar against a bunch of different electronica beats, and there's loads of slide guitar playing in it, and it's just wicked because it was really interesting. It was guitar playing being interesting. And then obviously, you know,
were you saying he's trying to replicate?
Yeah, he like replicates synth, like some electronic synth sounds, right, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And then of course everyone knows the really, really famous performance at Ronnie Scott's, and you just watch that and you're like, yeah, it's just the guy is, you know, just a machine in terms of guitar playing. And I think the thing is, probably the most original guitar player. I mean, obviously. I know that Jimi Hendrix and, you know, Jimmy Page and those guys were original. You know, Van Halen was an original, but I feel that some of those styles have been copied so much that they don't feel original. But every time you heard Jeff Beck, it was like,
it's very Jeff Beck. Yeah,
it was like only he could sound that. Only he could sound that way. Loads of people rip off Jimmy Page, and then Jimmy Page just sounds like that gentle vibe.
Sure. But he only
sounds like Jeff Beck, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, and you know, as far as whammy bar use on a Stratocaster goes, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable that he can achieve the sounds he did using just a, you know, a whammy bar.
I think it reminds me actually of a story from the GAC days when I early on when I started there, Jeff Beck did a masterclass at BIM. And I think someone from Fender or Marshall or BIM was like doing the masterclass. And they were like, oh, Jeff's rider is he needs this Marshall head and one of his signature Strats. Like, he's not even going to bring his own guitar. He's just like, no, you need to bring, he needs us to provide a guitar amp head and a guitar. And the manager at the time took it to the masterclass, came back and said he just plugged those two things, nothing else, and sounded exactly like him. and there's very few people that could just plug straight into an amp and I think just get that sound and that vibe. And yeah, yeah, just, and as well, like, his signature Strat was, some would regard as probably the most clinical, right, you know, compared to like other Fenders that people are making or playing or custom shops. It was just like a really good spec'd out Strat and didn't need any more than that.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, we're talking about albums that we were listening to. You were talking about, to me beforehand, that you've been listening to actually the two albums that you said the two albums, two 70s albums, Blow by Blow and Wired. And I think that was the changeover because Blow by Blow, he's playing that famous Oxblood Les Paul. And Wired, yes, I think, is his first Stratocaster album.
You may well be right on that one. Judging by the image on the front cover, which is one with him with a Les Paul and the other one with a Strat, probably makes sense. And then he played Strats quite a lot after that. And actually, I just, as we're talking about it, I remembered the album that I've actually, one of the albums I've actually got on vinyl, and I bought it purely because the front cover is somewhat ridiculous, is Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop with Terry Bozzio and Tony Hymas. And that is just a ridiculous guitar record of just like some amazing guitar playing, amazing drumming. But the front cover is him as a mechanic in a garage. And instead of working on a car, he's working on a Strat.
A giant Strat.
A giant Strat.
That he's got on one of those like raised things that you would raise up a car to work underneath it.
I mean, there was the story once where he said, the only reason I make records is so I can make money to spend on his cars, or something, something along that line. But I didn't realize that he'd only just recently played on the new Ozzy Osbourne record that came out like a month ago or something like that. But yeah, loads of great stuff to go back and listen to. But for if you want an amazing live performance, it's live at Ronnie Scott's. I mean, that is just amazing. Yeah. Jeff, if you want to listen to something different. And then, yeah, if you want, like, 80s guitar stuff, then... I mean, the great thing about Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop is it's got all of the, like, classic 80s guitar sounds in it.
Right.
It's like, how much chorus and delay can we add to the sound? It's got a reggae song on it. I mean, you know, everyone has to have some sort of reggae song at that point.
He had a strong reggae period.
It's just so weird.
For me, my favorite Jeff Beck record is Truth, which is his first album, 1968. His first solo album, obviously. There's the Yardbirds and everything, but his first solo record. He plays a Sunburst 59 Les Paul for that record, and it was my favorite because I love Led Zeppelin, and this is like getting an extra Led Zeppelin record.
Mm.
And so obviously it's before. He was doing all this crazy vibrato stuff on a Stratocaster. But for that sort of Led Zeppelin-esque rocked up blues, it's just an absolutely stonking record. And guitar tone is just everything you want from that sort of late 60s, early 70s rock and roll sound.
Yeah. Just
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, a bloody great guitar player. Bloody I would say it all in all. Player. Yeah, and definitely one of my favourites. But the guy that we just probably spoke about the least.
Yeah, yeah, really random there. I'm not sure we've ever really mentioned him on the podcast. Maybe in passing here and there. We should have spoken about him more. But anyway, so he will be sadly missed, but he leaves behind a fantastic back catalogue of music and a wonderful legacy and impact on the entire community. Now, moving on to talk about some other things. Oh, but as it happens, I was messaged by long-time podcast listener Brad Page recently, who I didn't realize, but Brad Page has his own podcast, Love That Song podcast. So, dear listener, go out and check that out. You check out the Love That Song podcast. It's very, very good. They go through like the history and the creation of great songs. It's really interesting. You get to uncover some really interesting facts about songs that you know and love. And we were speaking, and I think we're going to get Brad Page on a few episodes as well, because he's a great chap, knowledgeable about guitars, and I think he'd make a wonderful addition to you and me, Matt. So we will...
Amazing.
We'll do that at some point. Yes, yeah, exactly. Also, whilst we're talking about things that have been discussed, largely, you know, either on Patreon, patreon.com/guitarnerds, dear listener, or on the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Also, the question of the Branton Rantons came back up.
I forgot about those.
They were great. We did those years ago. I remember Mark used to come round my house, ply me with whiskey, and then ask me about things like contentious things that I dislike. And I never did them again because they were a little bit contentious. Like they were always tongue in cheek, but they got mixed feedback. But we'll see. I think we might do some. They might even include Mark Packham. Again, on the Patreon, we might do another little run of the Branton rant on, because I feel like there's plenty for me to rant on about at the moment, like HSS guitars,
the Strat,
PRS in general. There's so much that I could rant about. That's it. Just those two things. Really.
Just those two things. Yeah. You could rant about forever.
Bold poplar, fan frets. Oh yeah, there's poplar, all these Joe. Things.
Sure.
No, but we'll see. We'll see. There might be something. Along those lines. But the Facebook group has been great this week because we're going to talk about now, dear listener, what we've been up to, what Matt and I have been up to. But one thing we mentioned last week was that I was looking for an all-rounder guitar to do all the video demos for KMA. And we've had a lot of great suggestions from listeners. Of course, you know, I said on the podcast, obviously not anything HSS because not an HSS Strat because that's sacrilege, which it is. And of course someone was like, get an HSS Strat. Ugh. Do you also mail order your comfortable jeans and drive a Volvo?
I love my comfortable jeans.
But yes, so we had some great suggestions. Yogi the guitarist thinks that the Telecaster is the best all-rounder. Of course he does. Specifically, he called out the Jason Isbell Telecaster, which Matt, I think you were quite a fan of when we were.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that. I know that quite a few of the old YouTubers, friends that are tubers, have been raving about that. I, you know, probably disastrous to say to a lot of listeners, I have no idea who he is.
No, me neither. But I don't
we
think
we call ourselves the guitar nerds.
A songwriter, apparently. Yeah. People were explaining who he is on the.
I thought for a long time it was Jason Isabel, but it's not. It's Jason Isbell,
as in he is Bell.
exactly. But yeah, he is known for his work with the band The 400 Unit. Again, I've no idea.
Never heard of them. But still, it's basically a bound rosewood neck Telecaster. A good suggestion there as an all-rounder. Mark Knape was, I think I'm pronouncing it right. I think all the K's are silent in that name. I'm not sure. Correct me, Mark. Said anything by Reverend with PAF-style humbuckers. Quite a good shout. Reverend, great for all-rounders. Also, you get that bass contour control. Mm,
and that makes a huge difference. Although I tend to find I just leave it on all of the time.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. But that gives me some great options for like a big, thick, fat sound. Probably quite handy for like heavy stuff as well, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then I can still do that really skinny thing. I could probably get some sort of Tele-esque tones or Strat-esque tones by rolling it the whole way off, maybe getting that thin sound. I don't know if it works and if it thins everything out, you know, rolling it off. I'm not sure quite how the
how it works. I would, you know, on the Matt West signature I've got, I would say it goes from a normal sounding guitar to an absolute machine.
Right.
So I think, especially if you're using drive.
It doesn't cut, like, it boosts.
Yeah, it feels like it boosts, but it's not an active circuit. So
I see.
I'm not, you know, don't quote me on that, but it's definitely a really good, unique circuit to have in there that adds a lot of oomph, shall we say.
Okay, yeah, that is a good old suggestion. Philip Carter and a number of others had suggested an ES-335, whether I was going to Gibson or, you know, even the quality things that Epiphone are turning out these days. Certainly I'd have the option of a pickup upgrade in there. And how do you feel about a 335, Matt? That seemed to be a contentious post on the group. Some people were like, no, they only sound like 335s, but the point that Philip was raising was like, yes, it does sound like a 335 all the time, but it sounds great in every genre or every style you can play it in. It works.
It's probably not a bad shout. You know, I think maybe if you went down to like a 339, you'd probably get more of that, I guess, less air.
Less boominess. Yeah, yeah. That was also a suggestion.
But to me, I'm like, I'd probably say Tele.
Really?
Would I say a Tele or would I say a Strat? Strats are just so stratty. That's the thing.
Strats are so
stratty. I know that sounds awful.
A few people did say Strats, and I actually think the Strat is the opposite, because the Strat will always sound very, very specific. I realise I actually just said that about the 335 and was claiming that's a good thing. But Strat sounds so stratty.
Yeah. I think that's what I was trying to get through, is that they sound so much like a Strat. Quality podcast here. Strat really sounds like a Strat. I mean, yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think that's why we were saying like two humbuckers, Les Paul, a bit more control, PAFs, not as high output. You know, they're like a beefy, you know, almost like a super beefy single coil in some ways, depending on how you set them. Probably not a bad shout. I mean, for me, the ultimate all-rounder is still the Music Man.
Right.
The Valentine.
Active, though, Matt.
Yeah.
I can't leave it plugged in.
No, I know. I accidentally left my Ed O'Brien Strat plugged in, and then I got up this morning and was like, that's that battery flat. So, yeah, that is annoying. But Mariposa, then you could feel your love of Omar, but also have two humbuckers.
That is actually a really good shout. Mariposa, that is a good suggestion.
And then there's no tone control. There's just two volumes, right?
I think there is a tone. There's two volumes and a tone.
Are you sure? No, there's definitely just two volumes. I'm sure.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mariposa. Let's double check this bad boy. Oh, no, you can't just Google Mariposa, can you? Because it just brings up Butterfly. No, two controls. Sterling,
so it's just
one.
Two volumes.
Well, how did I not know this? The Sterling Music Man Mariposa comes in Pueblo Pink.
What?
Did we talk about this?
I didn't know it came in pink. I thought it only came in some rubbish blue, which was why I was never interested in it.
UK retailer, currently at 649.
Oh, that is only just outside of my tax rebate.
That, Joe, I think we've just solved it here. roasted maple neck with locking tuners in Pueblo Pink. Music Man Mariposa, £649. Joe.
I think that, to me, I'd actually go,
yeah, good all-rounder. Obviously not active, totally passive, just two volumes, shape all the tone, post-recording, and away you go.
Yeah, wow.
Blocking and if you don't want it, still... maybe I'll buy it.
Wow, I can't believe it. It's got
a trem, which you don't have to use if you don't want to.
Trems are handy. So if it's going to be an all-rounder, having a trem is better than being hardtail. This might be it. I think that might be it. So the thing that I had actually kind of landed on before this discussion was I went into my storage unit to have a look at all the guitars that I'd put away there to see if there was anything general purpose. And I came across a Fender American Professional Performer. What do they call the standards now? Performer? Professional? Matt?
I think it's professional now, isn't it?
Yeah, professional. Yeah, yeah. There we go. The Jazzmaster, which I have in that terrible color, Dark
Knight.
When did
you get that?
With Jay Cross, like 3 years ago.
Wow.
4 years ago. I didn't really like it. I left it in storage, and then I took it out, and I was like, actually, this is a great guitar. I just was really opposed to the finish at the time. It was very good.
I was going to say, if you don't want that, send it my way. Not that I need any more guitars, but...
I probably need to give it back to Jay Cross at some point, but he hasn't asked for it.
He won't know. He won't even listen to this podcast, mate. He'll be fine.
Exactly. But I've never really got on with Jazzmasters before, and sitting down, spending some time with it, they are fantastic, and they're pretty versatile. They kind of do a bit of a stratty thing, but you can also make them big, fat, and open sounding. Especially this one, it's obviously trying to be very modern and very versatile.
Oh, that's cool. I forgot about those. Yeah, I mean, that's... I guess for me, it's just the pickups. Are they going to give you enough oomph?
Mm, yeah. That is it.
I don't know. I'd go... The more I talk about it, the more I'm like, I'd go for the Music Man. In fact, actually, on Reverb right now, this might not be a bad shout for the money. Similar, although someone's put some... Oh, they've put weird Seymour Duncans in it. There's an early 90s Silhouette there. But someone has put those weird Seymour Duncans in it. The P-Rails, which is like a humbucker P90 and a single coil, like all in one pickup. Very weird. And then the tone control is like a weird selector.
Ugh. Why do people do it?
But I like their silhouettes. I think they're cool guitars. I am clicking watch. but yeah, I wonder if the Mariposa would be a good guitar for that. I think so.
Yeah. I think it might be a good shout. It's definitely, I'm going to think about it for a couple more days, but I think I'll be hard pushed to find something better than this. It seems to tick all boxes. It's from a company we like. It's a great color. It's, it's very cool. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, and I'll keep you all updated. But thank you very much, dear listeners, for your all-rounder suggestions.
Nice.
We'll see where I land. Now, Matt, you're still working on your base six. Is that right?
Indeed. We talked about this. I think we talked about this maybe in November. And we were talking about upgrading the base six, and we talked about the hardtail plate last week, but what I ordered ages ago was a company based in the UK that make a replacement bridge. So not only the saddles, but also the actual plate that the saddles sit on, all manufactured out of proper, I guess, aluminium. But they're solid barrel saddles, which have got a slightly deeper groove cut in them to stop string slippage. And then they are in slightly wider, or they're in, they do two different string spacing options depending on whether you've got a Squire or a Pawn Shop Basics, which is quite easy, quite a thing that you didn't really necessarily need, that you know you needed.
No.
But not only that, the plate itself is like twice the thickness, I guess you would say, of the standard plate. And the reason for that is the wider standard, it's made wider than the standard bridge with the recent models to overcome intonation problems associated with six string basses or bass sixes. It's really solid, really heavy, really well manufactured. Yeah, they're on like a 12-week waiting list.
Wow. Because lots of people bought bass sixes last year.
Because lots of people bought bass sixes. And it has truly, truly, now that I've got the hardtail in there, transformed it into a really awesome vintage sounding bass six. Those labella labella strings, the hardtail plate, and the bridge cost as much as the bass. Not quite, but near is, you know, not cheap. But the trem in it, the trem block is horribly that, you know, plated chrome trash that's not very heavy. The bridge saddles are average, and the strings, as you know, are super, super light. So all of those strings have just made a world of difference, and now with a proper setup, it's just like, yeah, it's wicked.
You need to record some sound examples for our listeners.
I will be doing some more very soon. We'll talk about that in coming weeks. Mm. But I finally got things rocking and a rolling in here. So
that's exciting. Actually did a bit of recording. They were quite simple things, because of course there are lots of crazy things you can do to a bass six. You can soup it up in many ways, but everything you've done has been very straightforward, and I think you've turned it into a fantastic instrument, even without a pickup change.
Yeah, even without a pickup change. And I think that's the thing. Actually, the pickups sound really good. I think the only thing it's probably missing now is decent shielding. Like when I was sat in front of my computer and it was like pretty buzzy when you weren't playing anything and it was picking up, you know, all sorts of weird noises to the laptop. But yeah, apart from that, I think it's they're worthy upgrades. If you don't use the trem, definitely makes a difference. Definitely makes a difference. So would highly recommend it. Stay Trem in the UK with a company that I used. They make a bunch of different ones, but they do a specific wide bridge for bass six in the string spacing specifically for the Squire bass sixes, and it's well worth the money.
Very, very cool. Now, last week, we introduced, for the first time, our idea of Spin the Wheel, which, of course, we'll be doing again this week. The idea of Spin the Wheel being that we will spin a wheel filled with the names of our top-tier Patreon supporters. The wheel will land on one of them, and that Patreon supporter can define a topic that we talk about on the following week's episode, as well as getting a lovely goodie bag, a lovely tote bag full of guitar nerds, trinkets and treats. Last week, Eric File won, and so he got in touch with us, and he said, I'm hoping you could discuss your favourite odd Gibsons, or even other brands, models, or the offerings from the mod shop or the demo shop. I just got my first true Gibson, a Chet Atkins Tennessean, and I love it. And watching Trogley's guitar show, Weird Gibsons has made me want to acquire many more guitars. So yes, Eric, I thought we would talk about some weird Gibsons, because of course that's something we've dealt with in the past on our YouTube. We did a whole top 10 of like odd, unusual Gibsons. It was a fascination of Mark Packham's for a long time. And there are some, here's the thing, because Gibson so often have attempted to reinvent the wheel and then abandoned it, it means that their history is littered with all these wonderful little gems that don't go for a lot of money. Certainly if what we're talking about for Gibson is the time after Ted McCarthy left Gibson. They were in the 70s, they were so directionless. They just tried lots of different things. and often got them wrong, which meant that they discontinued them after a short time, then tried something else. So we ended up with a lot of weird and wonderful things. I mean, one of the less weird things that I think is a great weird Gibson is a Gibson I talk about a lot, which is the Melody Maker. Even I think of the reissues that they did. They reissued them between 2007, 2013, something like that. They're dead affordable. You know, you can get them secondhand for sub £600.
I mean, it's mad to think, though, they're not very old and they're more money now than they were new.
What were they new?
I think they were like $399.
Really? But they are cool.
They were great guitars. I mean, you know, made in the USA, you know, stamped on the back of the headstock. Decent parts. They were basically the beginner's Gibson, I guess, is the way they were going about it. But I think you would part with very little cash. You'd get a really cool satin finish guitar that you could trash around. They wear in really quick. I mean, the same as the Gibson SG Faded that I've got, effectively. A great little guitar for the money. You know, and especially, if you want something a bit quirky that's not totally audible, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And as you say, you know, on the cheaper side of things as well.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of stick with that, because there are loads of weird... We could, of course, just talk about the Firebird X, but actually no one wanted the Firebird X. So let's talk about the Gibsons that are weird and odd, but are ones that we genuinely like and would play. Have you got any suggestions, Matt?
I would, and I've talked about this before, but I would... of course, go for the time that Gibson tried to make the Jimi Hendrix Strat. No, I think we could probably do a whole episode just on that, or a Patreon on that. But yeah, at one point, Gibson did try and make I think Jimi Hendrix family were like, oh, we're going to tie with a brand, and it had Jimi Hendrix signature on their headstock, but it was made by Gibson, and it had like a trem on it, but it looked like a weird Strat that Fender didn't make. Very, very weird, but not really a proper guitar. For me, if I could, and I have seen one, and I have played one, and I nearly bought one, despite it not working completely, and that's the Gibson RD Moog Artist series. So the RD Artist is their kind of, I guess they're sort of, imagine like an Explorer that's maybe melted slightly, so it's a bit more sort of rounded.
Shape, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, that's quite a good way of putting it, a sort of rounded extended Explorer.
Yeah, they actually did a few of these. They did the RD, but they actually also did an ES Artist and a Les Paul Artist as well, but all of them had Moog electronics in them. So you basically, I think they were like 859 at the time, and this was like 40 years ago. So I think this is late 70s, probably 1979. These were, but effectively you had a bunch of like electronic, you had a compression expand mode. Then you had some different tone modes.
Do you remember that I had one for a little while?
Did you have a guitar or did you have a bass?
I had the guitar. I was actually fixing it for a friend, but like, you know, she was like, why don't you, it was her dad's, and he'd passed away, and she asked if I'd fix it up first.
Right.
So she could play it. And so she let me keep it for about 6 months whilst I worked on it, because she wanted the effects to work as well. And I remember taking it apart and being like, oh, I'd never really seen the inside of it. And I was like, oh, the entire back plate is a PCB.
it was
crazy.
It's I guess it was more like an early attempt at active pickups, so there was a lot of circuitry around, you know, active EQ, active tone controls, and there's obviously this compression expander circuit. So expansion worked on the rear pickup, and Gibson said it allowed the guitarist to play harder and louder without the note collapsing, which gave a very fast explosive response with rapid decay. And then effectively like an onboard compressor. But the guitar itself is very cool, and the fact that it's got Moog electronics in, whether you use it or not, very quirky Gibson definitely something they didn't make a lot of. But yeah, something that I would play, because actually I love the guitar itself. Right. And if you can find them, they're expensive, but they're not like $50,000 expensive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be my choice. What about you, Joe?
The one that stands out for me is the Odd Gibson. That's incredibly underrated, very weird for them to have made at the time, and still not highly regarded now, but really I wish it was, because I think it's very good. It's the SG-100. Now, the SG-100 came in a series. There was the 100, the 200, and the 250. The 100 was essentially, it's an SG with a single coil pickup only in the neck. The 200 had two pickups. 250 also had two pickups, but was available in cherry rather than just a normal sort of dark wood finish, which I think was the only difference. But what was great about these, they came out in 71. I think they lasted about a year. Few of them were made. They were incredibly unsuccessful at the time, because Gibson had been making the Melody Maker. It's an entry-level guitar. It was really popular. It was an affordable way for people to get Gibsons, and they sounded good. And Ted McCarty had just left Gibson around this time, I think. And they wanted to change up their... what their entry-level guitar was. Of course, the SG was a very popular shape. So this should have worked on paper. An affordable SG should have worked on paper. But there were a number of things that made it a bit weird. They made it out of ash, for a start. They lost the angled headstock. So it was a straight headstock made out of ash. Single coil pickups, just one single angled single coil in the neck. And it actually meant that what you got was something that sounded a bit like a Telecaster, which is very cool, and I really like that. But I think at the time, and certainly if you want to buy an SG, if you want to buy a Gibson, you don't want to buy a Telecaster. You don't want to sound like a Telecaster. Mm. So for that reason, you know, people who wanted to sound like a Telecaster bought Fenders. People who wanted to sound like SGs wanted a proper SG, and this just wasn't it. And so for all those quirks, it was just incredibly unpopular. I think they look amazing. They had this gorgeous, like, bridge plate, like an ashtray cover over the bridge that said Gibson. The single coil pickup just looks lovely. Everything about them was great. I've never got a chance to play one. Everywhere you read it about, the build quality is notoriously terrible on them, but I bet that's not true. I bet they're awesome and everything I've ever wanted.
I remembered another guitar that is definitely a quirky one in terms of, I don't know the history behind it. I have seen one in the flesh and I was like, I have to own this. And that was the Gibson ES-140. So the ES-140 is a 3/4 sized 175. So it's
weird.
It's like it's full depth, but the whole thing has been shrunk in the wash.
I think I love it. I think I love it.
I don't know whether these really were. I don't know if these were designed to be like student guitars. I'd imagine not, because the ES is at that time, you know, 1950, we're still talking like, you know, premium.
Yeah, it was designed premium to be guitars. A student model. Targeted towards younger players with smaller hands.
Wow. I want one. I remember seeing one before and I wish I had the money. There is one available in the UK. I think it's had a replacement pickup in it, maybe, because it's got a really shiny P90 in it. It looks really out of place. Right. There's one in America that looks way better. But very, very cool guitars. Very, very cool guitars. And yeah, just quirky.
Yeah. That is an extremely cool Gibson. Well, you know, kind of there you have it. There's just so much. I mean, we haven't even, we're of course, dear listener, barely scratching the surface. We haven't talked about the Sonics or the Corvus or any of those other crazy things that Gibson made. But there are some great, affordable, vintage, weird Gibsons if you really shop around for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely. it is time. We're going to talk about what the question of the week is. And as requested, I've added the original question jingle. It's the question duck. And the question duck is asking all our listeners for question suggestions. This week, I think we're going to do two probably over on the Patreon. Dear listener, if you want to ask a question on any of our forums, email us at info@guitarnerds.net, on Facebook, on the Guitar Nerds group, on Patreon, if you like, get in touch with us, ask us, talk about a question that you'd like us to discuss on the Patreon, and we will do that. The two we're going to talk about this week, Peter Pesce has actually continued, less of a question, more a discussion point around last week's question by John Bai. I'll read what Peter said. He said, so I'm going to keep going with the John Bai question and the Patreon discussion. Number one, guitars made in Asia are now so good that in 3 to 5 years, every guitar under $1,000 will be made there. I think the PRS DGT SE will redefine what is possible. Fender, Taylor, and Martin may strain to keep a few Mexican things under that number, but not for long. Two valve amps will be increasingly boutique above $1,000. Nobody will be making cheap valve amps. The valve supply will no longer cover the volumes needed to make profits. People with valve amps will treat them like XKE Jags. Are treated now. Three, the US made will get harder to justify with the quality from other sources improving. Gordon Smith will bump their entry level GS1 up to $1,000 within 2 years. And the $1,000 guitar not made in Asia will be history. And then he's suffixed it by saying he didn't realize the lowest price GSs are already 999. So his prediction has come true. So we're going to talk a bit around that, sort of the upcoming Asian guitar market, what this means for American or British made guitars, and you know how things are sort of shaking out in that regard, how cheap guitars are getting better, stuff like that. And also we want to talk about Sam Brooksby has asked, would you spend £1,500 on the best instrument from an affordable brand or £1,500 on a lower end instrument from a premium brand? Those will be our discussion points on the Patreon episode.
Look forward to it.
Yes, indeed. And on that note, it's time for the news. Now, there's lots to talk about in the news. Obviously, the PRS DGT SE is a big deal and something that we should talk about. But first of all, Matt and I wanted to talk about something very exciting, as requested by Timothy Mifsud on Patreon, I think. He wanted us to talk about the new Josh Smith. Matt, you mentioned Josh Smith a bit last week, I think, but we wanted to talk about the new polypedal Josh Smith Flat V.
I can't remember why I talked about him.
It was the drawers, pedal drawers.
Oh, it was. Yeah, yeah. So I actually saw a hint of this on Instagram. I think they kind of just put it out into the world and then just went, oh, we're launching it on Monday, so you'll find out more about it then. But
yeah.
The Poly Effects, so I think the same company does the Poly Digit, the kind of big touchscreen sort of mega multi effects. They have done the Josh Smith Flat 5 Signature, Flat 5 being something that relates to Josh Smith, because I think his guitar is also called the Flat 5, and I think his studio is also called Flat 5 or something similar. This is his Signature Overdrive, a sophisticated two-channel gain stomp box with selectable diodes, synth-like controls, MIDI, and more. Very, very cool looking. First of all, very cool looking. It sort of looks like out of space. Space.
Worth prefacing that it's all touchscreen. All the buttons are touchscreen,
which is weird. You've got basically six controls, but four of those are sliders: high pass filter, volume, gain, and low pass filter. And you kind of slide your finger up and down, and this little, I would say, a trail of comets sort of lights up or lights down. So from a practical, visible point of view, It's quite unique. But effectively, you've got two cascading game controls, and each one of those can then have a series of different diodes as well. So depending on you know, how you want to mix and match things, germanium, silicon, and then I think two different types of other diodes in there, maybe only just sort of getting everything through. Selectable diodes from Schottky, germanium, silicon, and LED, while channel B is an amp style gain circuit with cascaded JFETs replacing valve. So an overdrive into a valve amp, amp in a box, I guess you would say, with synth inspired resonant filters to shape the tone of channel B. You can also use things like volume to get like tremolo. You've got MIDI. You've got envelope filters. You can do auto wire effects. And it's 100% analog.
Now, I read this and saw the pedal with its silly touchscreen things. And I was like, oh, you've overcomplicated something that didn't need to be this complicated. And then I watched the Josh Smith demos and I was like, oh, this sounds absolutely amazing. It's a
everything
fantastic drive pedal.
Everything that he demos sounds great. I mean, whenever I've watched videos of him talk through his pedal board, and it's just like, you know, when I was reading through some of these things, I'm like, LED sliders, and like, yeah, you can do auto wire, and it's got two 24, you know, dB resonant filters. I'm like, this sounds a bit like a Homer. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'll make you a pedal. Four drives, an amp in a box, auto wire. But, you know, whenever you look at anything that's been a Josh Smith signature from his fuzz pedals or, you know, from Venurum or what, he just knows how to dial it in. He does loads of session work. He knows what he wants. He tweaks it. You know his guitar is going to be great. You know, everything that he puts his name against is going to be road tested to the nth degree by him. So I don't doubt his, his ability to kind of help create something quite wonderful.
Yeah, certainly. He talks through the presets that come on the pedal when you get it, which are the six presets that he himself has chosen, and every single one of them just sounded fantastic. I do wish it was on rotaries, but that's purely a personal thing. I think I would be willing to get over that for the sake that this pedal sounds absolutely fantastic. It's so weird to see something that looks so modern that sounds so vintage. You know, they're so at odds.
I mean, the auto wire actually captures me. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the best worst electro-harmonics pedal of all time, the Tube Zipper, which I could never get a decent sound out of ever. But I only wanted one because John Frusciante had one at some point, and then never saw it on his pedal board again. Never did actually buy one, mainly because every time I wanted to try one when I worked at GAC, you'd get it out of the box and a valve would be smashed, and it would sit in a box for like 10 years until you decide to like sell it for 20 quid or something. But also, yeah, I love low pass filters. The fact that you could actually kind of dial back the gain and again over MIDI, and it's 100% analog, you know, I think it's great having analog drive that you can have some presets on.
Yeah, absolutely. I never really thought about it, but actually the fact that the way the pedal was laid out, the touchscreen on the pedal, how easy it was for him to select each preset and have these six utterly unique different drive fuzz-esque sounds, preamp sounds. This is very good. This is a very good product. Polyfx are a smaller company. But I think this pedal could do really big things with a name like Josh's behind it. And I really hope people pick up on this. I think it's very, very good.
We haven't really, maybe we should reach out to the guy, but we never really talked much about the Polyfx. I know they came out and at the time we were sort of like, not really sure, I guess, because they're sort of, the concept of the Bebo, which is their main one, is like, it's the power of a modular synth in an easy to use touchscreen format. So you've just got three buttons and then you've got this really nice like OLED screen that allows you to kind of like wire and rig stuff in different ways. And we've never really tried it. I've not really seen it for sale anywhere.
No.
It does come in pink, which is always a...
I think that was why we checked it out in advantage. The first place.
But yeah, I'd be keen to revisit it and go back to it, I think. See what it's like. But this does definitely intrigue me in many ways, I think. I like the idea of this kind of, I guess analog game with MIDI control reminds me a little bit of the old TC Electronic distortion they had. That was the overdrive and the distortion in one box. You had two channels and MIDI control. So 100% analog signal path, I think, is great. Touchscreen, I mean, I agree with you. Sometimes you think, knobs would be better.
I mean, what happens when your hand gets wet? What happens if you're sweating when you're playing a show and you need to change the preset? And,
no idea.
It does that thing like how phones are when you try and text someone with wet hands and you end up, telling them something very rude about their prostate. Like,
you probably just need to put some sort of dust cover on it, Joe, when you're out there playing.
That's it.
Yeah, I'm keen. I'm keen to try it. I'm keen to give it a go. $399 in English pounds. Kind of, expensive.
It's premium.
It is premium. Price. But definitely willing to give it a go.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Let's reach out, because I think this is a cool pedal and I want to do more stuff with it because it sounds great. Anyway, dear listener, sorry, I said we've got so much to get through, so apologies that I'm racing through things. We are going to talk about the PRS SE next week, but I really want to talk about the guitar and a pedal that we picked up. So let's do our show and tell. So this week, as I shared all over the group and on the Guitar Nerds Instagram, I got a very lovely Ann Coates guitar. I got one of the new Islington Rockets sent through from Ann Coates in a gorgeous fool's gold finish with a creamery 59 humbucker in the bridge and a super fat cat Filtertron in the neck. Lovely Vibrola system on there. It's a fantastic guitar. It looks absolutely incredible. Matt, did you see it?
I did. I saw you post it on Instagram. I think I saw a similar guitar at the London Guitar Show. I don't know if it's the same one he had
there. Maybe. Dear listener, if you're coming to the Birmingham Guitar Show, I'm bringing it to that, or I'm sending it back to him just before that. Am I bringing it? I can't remember. But anyway, it's going to be at the Birmingham Guitar Show.
I like this one because obviously you've got, a unique body shape, double cutaway. You've got the German curve on there. You've got the really nice Duesenberg Les Trem, I guess it is, system on there.
Yes.
Nice mix, as you say, of pickups, well-designed, nice headstock.
Yeah.
Not a lot of money.
No.
realistically. I think, what's the starting price? $2,000 before you add any extras in, considering they're all handmade to order.
Yeah.
I think it's a great guitar.
Lovely shallow D neck. Feels very Gibson-y in the neck to me. Really playable, really well set up. I don't know what's on there. It feels like it might be 11s, though.
Good.
But it's definitely it's super comfy. I really, really enjoy playing it. And a very cool thing about this guitar, it's a little thing that he's trying out at the moment. He calls it Future Relic. So the deal is the finish, the Fool's Gold finish, is a thin coat. And underneath that is another colour that will be revealed only when it wears through. So it's like those colour-on-colour relics, but you only get the second colour when you play it. That's cool. He's not sure if it's a bit contrived, but I'm like, no, that's awesome. You're adding this is like a sweet with more than one flavour.
Well, I like you said that, Jay, because I remember when I did a colour over colour, I was like, I wanted it to be like one of those raspberry ruffle chocolates you get in the UK. It's a thin layer of chocolate, but inside it's vibrant pink. I love that idea. I think that's great. Because colour over colour, realistically, is something that, unless you buy a vintage guitar that's been refinished and you know there's another colour underneath, it's not going to happen naturally. You've got to refinish a guitar twice. So I like that thin layer of thin layer of gold that you can slowly rub away into another color.
That's great.
Future Relic.
He needs to patent that because that is a great idea.
And actually all the paint is water-based from a local company to hit where they're made as well, which is quite nice.
Yes, one of the backbones, I believe, of Ann Coates is that everything, or as much as possible, is very, very locally sourced.
I would. I mean, if I had to have one though, I would still go for the NQ.
What's the NQ?
The NQ is the. I guess it's kind of like an offset, kind of like a Jaguar body. Maybe horns are a little pointier with one humbucker, and then a kind of compensated Teddy style saddle. I mean, obviously, there's lots of different options you can get, but I just like the body shape. I think it's very, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely cool. There's something about the scratch plate on the NQ that, for me, makes it borderline 80s rather than 50s inspired. I don't know what it is, but I'm definitely more at home on the new Islington. And the new Islington, standardly, I think, has much less of a German carve on it. You've got the rocket version, which is far more shapely. That's what I've got, with this lovely sort of rocket-shaped scratch plate. So the scratch plate's made of two different materials. You've got the in this case the taut, which is the bulk of the plate, and then you've got almost the wings of the rocket are in my case a sort of a white scratch plate material. It's very cool. It's a really lovely idea on the plate, but yeah, it's a fantastic sounding guitar. I had lots of fun with it. I recorded last week's KMA reel on Instagram, dear listener, if you want to check that out. That's the rocket, and it's been all over KMA's Instagram as well as Guitar Nerd's Instagram actually this week, and so I've recorded something with it. But I also got sent a pedal, which I will talk about more over the coming weeks, because I've had a fantastic time with it. It's by Goliath Effects, a very small little effects company that we're going to do some stuff with, dear listener. So watch this space. But Goliath Effects, often making just a one-man company, making, you know, pedals in his shed, but they're very, very good. Limited runs. He's made something called the Ice Drive in this gorgeous sort of cracked white and blue finish. It's very lovely. It's a complex drive pedal. So it's got like a separate mids and then a tone control, a sort of a tone stack based on like a Marshall style thing. Then like a master volume, a blend. And one of the things I really like is it has a rotary clipping section that sweeps between LED clipping and asymmetrical silicon diode clipping, which is rather cool. So you can, rather than having one or the other, you can really tailor your own tone. And it even has like a separate foot switch on there, which gives you a slightly different voicing to the pedal, a bit less bass heavy, a bit more pronounced, great for cutting through. It's like a lead button, essentially, but really good drive pedal. I had a great time recording with it. Here's a little track with the Ann Coates New Islington Rocket and the Goliath Ice Drive. We'll be right back. There you go. There you go. The Anne Coates New Islington Rocket with the Goliath effects.
Sounds bloody drive. Fantastic, Joe. That was one of the best pedal demos I've heard in a long time, actually. It's really nice hearing it in context. I think that's always the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't
play guitar unless there's a drum beat. I'm terrible without it. So, I'm not great anyway, but I'm terrible without a drum beat. So I have to make them out of little tracks just to make them proper.
The only thing I would say is when you said Ice Overdrive, I thought very much of the Ibanez Joe Satriani Ice 9 Overdrive, which is possibly one of the worst distortion pedals out there. So any note for the company, just be warned. Don't get confused with the Ibanez Ice 9. Yeah. But I thought it sounded really good, Joe. Really top notch.
Yes. Yeah. Really, really cool pedal. And just the new Islington. So good. So good for the money as well. Such a top notch guitar. Dear listener,
yes. I mean, that sounds ace. Absolutely ace. What were you running into? Just a plug-in or...?
So, for context, dear listener, that was all on the bridge pickup, all on that Creamery humbucker in the gold foil in the bridge. I was running straight into Neural DSP using the Tone King, which is the only thing I really use for recording anymore. Believe it or not, the Tone King, when you load it up, it has a default setting that has a touch of reverb and a little bit of delay, which you can get to just sync with whatever the BPM is of your track that you're loading up. And that's it. I don't actually change it from the default setting because it sounds so good.
If it works for you, exactly. And that's what's important.
And with this, with the Ice Drive, like a transparent-ish overdrive that has a blend control, I can get the best out of that Neural DSP amp and I can get the best out of the drive pedal at the same time. It was a really good combination.
Loved it. Nice. No, it sounded great.
Yes. Well, we are drawing towards the end of this week's episode, dear listener. So it is time for us to spin the wheel. We're going to decide who is going to select our topic for next week. Now, I realize that, of course, you can't hear me spinning the wheel, dear listener. So I'm going to spin the wheel as I play the jingle this week. Here it is. Okay, everyone, dear listener, we have a winner, and it is Chris Franklin. Chris Franklin, well done. Congratulations, you have won the joy of a goodie bag and also to decide what Matt and I are going to talk about this week. Thanks very much to Eric File for the great Gibson topic. Chris, can you top it? Can you top Eric? Let us know. We'll be in contact. And we'll sort out next week's topic. Now, it has come to the end of this week's podcast, dear listener. Matt and I are going to be heading over to the Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. If you want to get in touch with us and ask questions for any reason at all, if you have a company you think we should be checking out, or if you are a company or a brand or a luthier or anything like that, then you can email us info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram. You can ask us in the open forum on our Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group. And if you're a Patreon supporter, then contact us through Patreon. I'll actually respond to you if you do that. We're heading over to Patreon to talk about this week's question of the week. You can join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up and support our charming community. I want to say thanks very much to everyone that signed up this week. I don't think I've ever had as many new patrons after a first episode in a series as this. Normally everyone leaves when they realize we're doing another series, but no, it's been fantastic. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye.
And now, of course, course, as is customary, I'd like to thank our very wonderful top-tier $10 dear Patreon backers, with whom out this wouldn't be possible. Thank you to Suresh, to Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, Mark Hizau Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Bork, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.